Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, Wednesday, June 12th. Three bills on our agenda. We will take them in order this morning. Thought I'd do something different. I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 431B.
Chair Nicholson, members of the committee, Senate Bill 431B relates to the levy district surrounding essentially the Portland Airport and watershed areas in Multnomah County. And currently, there are four taxing districts and also government structures to manage those floodplains and levy districts. And those areas are in need for FEMA recertification and levy improvements. And so this bill would take those four different districts and create an interim body to dissolve those districts and then create one comprehensive district and essentially remove the taxing structures of those four districts and then create subsequently a bond structure and utility fee structure to upgrade and fund the new improvements and ongoing maintenance.
Thank you. Welcome, Senator Manas Anderson, Representative Gorsuch, in whichever order you care.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Lori Manas Anderson, Gresham Troutdale Village, Fairview, and a little bit of East Portland. There's an urgency. The legislative revenue staff explained the bill quite well. There is an urgency to this. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers is completing a federally authorized study of the levy system, which is the best pathway available to secure money, federal funds, for local levy improvements. And the study will culminate with the Corps delivering recommendations to Congress, along with a request to fund up to 65% of the recommended improvements. We really need to have this new governance structure in place to be able to leverage this opportunity and reduce the overall cost borne by Oregonians. Again, it's a 27-mile stretch starting, it covers all of our district to the Sandy River and all of those levees. We certainly don't want to have what happened to Vanport a long time ago, and it's really important for us to pass this bill. I won't go into the particulars. I can if you want me to, but I'll turn it over to the good representative.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, committee. It's good to see you. I feel like I just saw you all. I am here, as the Senator indicated, to speak with you about Senate Bill 431. I am, for the record, Chris Gorsuch, State Representative for District 49, which is the northern half of the Senator's jurisdiction. So as Senator Manas Anderson indicated, this is a very long stretch along the Columbia River. It's from the Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad tracks, which are west of Interstate 5, all the way past PDX east up to the Sandy River. And it's that lowland area then where you will find things like Portland Airport, a whole bunch of development along Airport Way, things like that. So my district covers the eastern portion of all of this. And of course, we have historically had a number of floods along here. There's been six major floods in this area since 1894. 1894 is considered the flood of record, the highest observed flood in recorded memory at 39 feet. So once in a while, the Columbia River can be a very serious problem for us. Part of this history is what happened to the city of Vanport, which the senator alluded to, wartime public housing built for shipyard workers in World War II, that on Memorial Day in 1948, the railroad embankment actually failed at the western end of the system. Within a few hours, the city was completely underwater. 15 people died, 18,000 were displaced. At the time, Vanport was the second largest city in the state of Oregon, cleverly named because it was between Vancouver and Portland, where Delta Park is today. 1996 was the last major flood along this stretch of the Columbia. So our levees haven't been seriously tested for over 20 years. And unfortunately, or fortunately, depending upon how you look at it, we've seen a lot of good, solid economic development that's occurred within the floodplain since then. So this legislation is part of a larger effort to address safety issues nationwide. And we want to avoid getting into situations like what we saw in, for instance, New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina. The Columbia River is obviously very important to Portland's economy. The eastern end of the metro area's Columbia Corridor, much of it in my district, still has a fair amount of developable industrial land. Certainly development began with PDX, but the area along Airport Way starts in the early 1980s. More recently, we've seen changes and additions with things like, you may be aware of the Amazon facility at Troutdale Airport, as well as FedEx, which is out there. But there's still a lot of area that can be developed. And if you consider then the safety issues for travelers at PDX, for all the workers, for all the infrastructure, I think that you would can see that there's probably something very good to help and preserve here. So this process starts a process, as was said, to unify the system so that we have a unified district to deal with these issues. The four districts that are there are really not set up for this sort of activity. And so basically that's the bill. So thank you all for hearing my testimony, and I can answer any questions along with the senator. There are other people also coming behind us.
Let me add just a few more things. There is the problem, and the problem is right now there are four major drainage districts, and this was established when the area was mostly farmland. And I'm operating under the way the structure is now has really many, many challenges, and I'll just briefly mention them. One is federal accreditation. There are new federal standards. We're having a very difficult time meeting those standards. There's fragmented responsibility over the whole system. It's inefficient and redundant to administer one system across four districts. And then there's constrained budgets. With this new, we will be able to have a unified budget. And then there's inequitable distribution of services and benefits in each one of these districts. So that is the problem, and this bill will solve that particular problem.
And Madam Chair, the great thing about this is there is the local control element of it, because this bill sets the stage then for having a citywide vote. About the levy system, which someone else will speak about.
Thank you.
Do you have a quick question for the senator? You spoke of accreditation. Are you talking about the levy accreditation?
Okay. Yes, federal accreditation. The drainage districts have not been able to meet the new federal standards and ensure that the levy system remains accredited. So yes.
I assume that's what I want to make sure. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Rush. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just Representative Gorsuch's comment on the naming of Vanport, I would concur that that's a better name than Cougarland. So.
I don't know. If I may respond, Madam Chair.
I think that's the only other alternative you can buy this.
I understand that. I'm concerned, though, that you may be a little wet on this.
Okay.
All right.
I'm done.
Okay.
Fine,
so, I'll be here all session. Thank you very much. I know Barbara Smith Warner is like, yes. Thank you.
Thank you both for being here. We have several others signed up to testify. Jules Bailey, Jeff Condit, Evo Trummer, please come up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jules Bailey, and I am here today as the volunteer convener of the Oregon Solutions process that is known as Levy Ready Columbia. And it is a very exciting day for us to be in front of you. And I have to confess, after 5 years as serving as convener on this project, I'm actually more excited to be here at 8 a.m. Revenue than I ever was before coming down. This is a really a momentous occasion for us. This bill comes to you after a lot of work by a lot of people. And sitting around the Oregon Solutions table over the last many years, we've had representatives of over 25 different entities, including all of the different affected local governments, neighborhood associations, the public, business organizations, environmental organizations, organizations representing equity and diversity. We've had a lot of input, we've had a lot of debate, and we've had a lot of discussion. And what's before you is a bill that we are really excited for and that we think will bring important changes that will modernize this system in a way that will bring better flood protection, better economic protection, and better environmental protection than any of the systems that we've had in the past. It's come to you from the Senate, where it went through the Senate Environment Committee, was vetted in Senate Revenue, and then, of course, on the floor, it has yet to receive a no vote to this point. Senate Bill 431, as you heard from Senator Mona Sanderson and Representative Gorsuch, and I want to thank them for their leadership on this bill, is a tool to ensure that we can meet the stringent standards that FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers have applied to our levee system. And why is this important? Many of you are familiar with Vanport and the history there. It was a tragic history of Vanport, and in fact, one that the late and beloved Senator Winters experienced firsthand as a little girl. But that history didn't stop then and has continued since. And even just last year, there were two incidences in which, had we not had those levees or had they failed, the airport would have been underwater just last year. This year, we've had several flood incidences, and we've seen throughout the country and in the Midwest, particularly right now, that floods, especially right now, are an increasing risk and increasing concern to the economic health of many communities across the nation. Because of this, and because of the situation that happened in New Orleans in 2006 with Hurricane Katrina, the federal government has upped its standards on accrediting these levee systems. We need to meet those standards. And while that has been a challenge, it is also an opportunity. And that opportunity is to, as we meet those challenges by updating our governance structure, we can also update the way that we approach flood safety in the urban area. Approaching flood safety means making sure that we have levees that are accredited, that meet those federal standards, and that allow us to maintain participation in the federal programs. For example, in the FEMA flood insurance program that allows for lower cost flood insurance in the floodplain, or for the Army Corps of Engineers program that allows them to come in and help in the event of a flood disaster. But it also allows us to give more people a say and a stake in flood fighting, and to be able to take advantage of best practices in flood safety, such as using green infrastructure and ecosystem restoration and environmental benefits in how we think about how we manage floods and how we balance habitats with how we manage flood safety. It's also important that we do that because of the assets that are behind these levees. We have over $16 billion in annual economic activity that are protected by these floods. That is tax revenue that accrues to the entire state of Oregon. We have 7,500 residents, 59,000 employees, and employees that are overwhelmingly in manufacturing sector, are blue collar, and are far more diverse than employees in other areas. So this is an important system to protect, and we are looking forward to answering your questions on how we modernize this system. But in short, without going into all the nitty-gritty details of what is a fairly complex bill, what this bill does is operate under the principle of many hands make light work. And we are taking what are historically smaller drainage districts that have been responsible for paying the cost of this improvement, enlarging that to a new district that covers the urban growth, Multnomah County within the urban growth boundary, and establishing a governance structure that will cover that entire area that balances the costs and benefits to the different people within that area. So what does that mean in practice? It means for somebody like me that lives in Multnomah Village, about as far from the levee as you can get in Multnomah County, and at 500 feet, where incidentally, if I have a problem with flooding at my house, we don't need a levee, we need an arc. But I use the airport. I benefit from the jobs. I benefit from the tax revenue that accrues from those jobs. And so I should help maintain that levy as well. By spreading out that cost base, we're able to actually meet this challenge in a way that is very financially feasible, and that would allow us to take the burden off of just the residents that are living right there along the river. Now, they'd benefit from flood protection directly, so they will potentially, depending on how the structure is set up, have more stake in it and more cost. But the overall governance structure spreads it out around the entire district so that everybody has a piece of it. We know that right now, just to meet basic certification, it's about $43 million in upgrades that are needed, and more long-term. But this bill puts us on the path for a governance structure that meets the long-term obligations of these districts, of the flood control and levy system, in a way that is sustainable and that ensures that we have ongoing accreditation and the ability to meet this challenge in the future. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jeff, who will walk through some of the details.
Thank you, Jules. Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Condit. I'm an attorney at Miller Nash Graham Dunn. We represent Multnomah County Drainage District, and the Drainage District led me to Levy Ready Columbia to help draft this bill. So I'm going to talk a little bit about sort of the technical aspects of the bill, and I can answer any questions you have about specific provisions. As Senator Montes Anderson stated, the current drainage districts were established in 1917, and their purpose was to drain farmland so that for agricultural purposes. And so the chief thing that in the chief authority of the new district is focused on flood protection and flood risk reduction. So it's focused on what the districts are actually doing today rather than what they did at the turn of the last century. And that's been an authority problem for the drainage districts, current drainage districts, that this bill will remedy. The other significant thing in the authority section is it allows the districts to consider water quality, habitat, and landscape resiliency strategies as they are developing their flood protection program. Currently, the current districts have no authority to consider that, except as may otherwise be required by other state and federal law. So, as you may know from reading about Katrina, sort of landscape and environmental methods of flood control are now becoming mainstream, and this will allow the district to employ those. As Jules mentioned, the overall boundary of the district is the urban growth boundary in Multnomah County. It also creates a sub-boundary called the managed floodplain, which is the area behind the levees that are actually protected from flooding. And the reason for that is the reason Jules mentioned, which is to allow differential method of levying utility fees against that area. So governance, the governance structure is a little complicated because there's an initial board and a permanent board. The initial board has a membership appointed by the governor, and that membership looks very much like the membership of Levy Ready Columbia that's been working for the last 5 years. And the reason for that is so that we can take advantage of the expertise and deep knowledge that that group has developed over the last 5 years, because the purpose of the interim board is to actually set up the new district, adopt the financing structures, and set it in motion. At that point, it will be transferred to a permanent board, which is 9 members, most of whom are elected, five of whom are elected, 4 of which are appointed by the governor. And the reason for that structure is to allow for direct representation, but also allow the governor to appoint people with special expertise in flood control to the board. The current drainage districts, the boards are elected by the landowners in the district once a year, and only landowners can be on the board. So it's a much broader representation. Powers and duties. Basically, this district will have the powers that most other special districts have. They can adopt ordinances. They can build drainage improvements. They can construct levees. They can exercise contract. They can sue and be sued. And they can exercise the power of eminent domain. And I want to talk about that last one just briefly, because their power here actually includes the ability to acquire property from other governmental entities when necessary for flood control. So that you may, if you've looked at that bill, that you may have had a question about that. That is required of local sponsors under federal law. So the existing districts actually have that authority. And this authority is actually more limited than the existing districts have because it's limited to the managed floodplain area. And it has to be for the express purpose of flood control. So we believe that authority is sufficient to continue our ability to be the local sponsor under federal law. And so I just wanted to point that out because that was an area of contention when we were going through developing this bill. There is also a requirement that the district create a watershed improvement plan as part of going through this process so that, again, these environmental considerations are taken into account as part of their program. Financing, as Jules mentioned, there's really two primary methods of financing the district. The first is service and user charges. So it'll be set up like a utility, like a stormwater utility. Those fees will be levied in the managed floodplain, and those are intended to pay for actually the operations of the district and could do some capital improvements because it also gives them the authority to levy revenue bonds, issue revenue bonds based upon those. And then finally, general obligation bonds. The district can authorize to ask the voters to approve a general obligation bond within the total boundaries of the district. Again, that operates as it does for any other local government entity who goes to the voters and asks for general obligation bonds. The voters have to approve it. And then those bonds can be used only for capital construction and maintenance. And that the intention of that is to deal with that $43 million plus that the districts have to find in order to meet their accreditation requirements. Finally, as Senator Gorsuch mentioned, Senator Montes-Anderson, or Representative Gorsuch and Senator Montes-Anderson mentioned, once the district is set up, the financing is in place, there's a process to dissolve the four existing districts and transfer their assets and responsibilities to the new district. So we will have one governmental entity instead of four with greater authority to do what they're actually supposed to be doing, which is flood protection. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, Joe Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ivo Tremmer. I'm the State Affairs Manager for the Port of Portland, here to speak on behalf of the Port of Portland in support of the bill. Briefly, just about us, the Port of Portland was founded in 1891 by the Oregon Legislature with the purpose of to dredge the shipping channel in the, from the Portland Harbor all the way to the Columbia River to Astoria. We still do that today. Today, we also manage four marine terminals in the Portland Harbor. We're the largest holder of industrial land in the state of Oregon. We manage two general aviation airports, one in Troutdale and one in Hillsboro, and Portland International Airport. Much of our infrastructure is behind the levy. It's billions of dollars worth of infrastructure. We're adding about $2 billion worth more at the Portland Airport over the next 5 years. PDX saw about 20 million passengers last year, and it's growing by leaps and bounds. So we're concerned that the levy holds for the safety of passengers, not to mention for the safety of the all the employees in the floodplain or the residents there. So we think it's critical. We think it's a good bill. We think it's an important bill, and we certainly hope to earn your support. Thank you.
Thank you, all three of you. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd share I'm a strong supporter of this concept. Should this become law, will there be financial benefit to landowners who currently are required to have flood insurance? Will there be any potential reduction in flood insurance rates for those who are within floodplains or floodways?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Smith, that's a good question. I can't speak to what would happen in the market for flood insurance, but from a technical perspective, this is really avoiding harm as opposed to conveying a benefit, making sure that we stay accredited and that we don't lose the ability for them to have lower cost insurance.
On a very, very smaller scale, Milton Freewater did something very similar to this concept. And it actually ended up saving millions of dollars for residents and business owners because they're able to negotiate with FEMA as it relates to flood insurance requirements within floodways and floodplain. area, and so while I have no idea if this measure will do that, perhaps in the future it will. One last point, without getting too political at all, this should be a reminder to everyone how important the Columbia Snake River hydro system is. When the Corps of Engineers built those dams, it was not intended for power production, as we all think. It was about flood control. And there's a system of dams that start in Montana and Canada and Idaho and work their way all the way down to the Bonneville Dam. And but for those hydro dams, we would have a much greater issue to be dealing with. It's just a good reminder for us.
Thank you, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. As a former city manager who had levies on accreditation issues and FEMA issues, I'm intimately familiar with the regulations you speak about, the 65 USC and all the accreditation and the problems that go with that, the issue of the firm map, the flood insurance risk maps, and the criteria to maintain the changing target and try to stay up with, because even though you meet the Army Corps of Engineers credentials, you do not meet FEMA's credentials, which is extremely problematic. I applaud your efforts. You're doing the right thing, and this is a great bill. And it needs to put these guys on the right track. It is an extremely messy process. And I've sat through a few of those FEMA meetings, and they have not been pleasant meetings. But thank you for your effort. I think you're doing absolutely the right steps, and this is the only path forward for you.
President Finley, thank you. And sometime we'll share Baron war stories about FEMA and the Corps. Oof.
Yeah, it was kind of ugly.
Thank you all for your testimony. I'm always impressed and feeling an additional degree of confidence when Oregon Solutions is involved. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's no one else signed up to testify on this bill. I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 431B, opening a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2129A.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. House Bill 2129A comes to you from the Joint Committee on Transportation. And this bill deals with tax expenditures, number of tax expenditures in the transportation sector. The three that are specific in this bill are the ones primarily that have to do with the first, the payment on used fuel or propane. CNG, propane CNG are thought of as the used fuel, which is taxed on the same level as gasoline, but in an equivalent gallons. So it is today at 34 cents per gallon. And what this allows is for the users of or business users of this type of fuel to pay their taxes in a different and alternative way. So instead of paying per the gallon, they buy a decal and they put it on their vehicles, and that allows them for an annual payment that has a schedule on it. So what this bill is extends this ability for these fleets to do that type of payment process until 2026. And then the second one is allowing vehicles who are heavy classified, which is 26,000 pounds and above, to who usually would pay the weight mile tax. These would be, pay only the fuel tax instead of the weight mile tax if they are dealer's test vehicles. So if a person goes to a dealer and they want to test drive the vehicle, so instead of because it is on the road, instead of it be paying the weight mile tax, it will pay fuels tax instead. And this is also being extended to 2026. And the third one, which is actually is also in another bill, it allows for the exemption from both fuel tax and weight mile tax for the vehicles that are testing emissions or emission testing vehicles. And that's what the bill does.
Thank you. Any questions or comments before we go to public testimony? One person is signed up to testify, Lana Butterfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Lana Butterfield. I'm here on behalf of the Pacific Propane Gas Association. And we encourage you strongly to pass House Bill 2129. I'm here to testify on Section 2, which has to do with propane. This continues a great law which allows an owner of a vehicle which uses an alternative fuel to annually purchase a decal in lieu of paying at the pump. Now, gasoline, which is only used as a motor fuel, is assessed and pays taxes at the point of distribution. So when you go to the pump, the tax is already built into the price. Propane, however, is used in a variety of ways. Heat your home, you can dry your orchard, you can use it in a forklift, as well as in a motor vehicle. And so the tax before this law was passed happened at the gas pump, at the propane filling tank at the gas station. Now, the great variety of uses of propane has also proved a burden to users of propane in motor vehicles, because many folks who sell propane, and it's the same fuel for any use, but many folks who sell propane for barbecue tanks, for example, would not, because of the tax compliance issues, fill your motor vehicle tank. And so this decal, when they see the decal, they know that they do not have to collect the tax at the pump, and they'll sell it to you. So that greatly increases the range for individuals and primarily for fleets to be able to drive a propane-powered vehicle. It's great for our fleets. We don't have too many folks using us. It's a minimal fiscal impact. But this is a new law, and we believe that it will increase as time goes on. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions? Here. Not sure I said the right words when I opened the public hearing. Did I also open the work session? Thank you. Then we're ready for a motion. If the committee is ready.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2129A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Finley moves House Bill 2129A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objections? Motion passes. Do we have a volunteer to carry 2129? Thank you, Representative Smith. Any other business on House Bill 2129? I think not. I'm closing the public hearing and work session on House Bill 2129A. Opening a work session on House Bill 2053A.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, House Bill 2053A initially dealt with four programs administered by Business Oregon. The Dash 5 amendment that is described on the SMS and is in OLIS replaces the bill and makes two kind of administrative changes or clarifications to a program. It's the New Industrial Property in Rural Areas program. The first change that it clarifies that the definition of employment at eligible areas is only for the location that is tax exempt, not a company's employment in the entire state. And the second change, it allows for a company and the local government to come to a mutually agreeable date at which this employment would be, the employment wage verifications would take place. This takes effect on the 91st day following adjournment sine die. There is no fiscal impact, and we expect the revenue impact to be minimal. These changes might help this program function better, and so there could be increased participation, but they are, we believe, administrative.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I'm a member of a limited liability company that does economic development. And in no way will I financially gain from House Bill 2053, but I do use these programs to help businesses throughout Eastern Oregon, and so I just want to make sure everyone knows that. Thank you.
Thank you. Committee, I want to make sure that you're aware that the amendment is a substantial change from the way the bill looked originally. It's just a small thing now instead of a big thing in covering a number of different programs. Okay. Any other questions, discussion? We're ready for an amendment. A motion?
Chair Nathanson, I move the Dash 5 amendment be adopted into House Bill 2053A.
Representative Marsh moves the Dash A5 amendment adopted into House Bill 2053. Discussion on this motion? Objections? Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2053A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Marsh moves House Bill 2053A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Objections? Motion passes. Representative Marsh,
sure.
Carry this bill. We're done with this one. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2053A. There's no other business before us today. We are adjourned.